welcome to the Rosman Experience with your host, Rick Rosman. For the past 32 years, Rick has been a well-known name in the world of finance. He continues to follow his passion for volunteering and working with charitable and nonprofit organizations. His dedication to education and the youth of the Los Angeles area knows no bounds. He loves his work and strives every day to make a difference in the world. We invite you into the Rosman Experience to enjoy Rick and his many guests who will be bringing you their stories of philanthropy and volunteerism and introducing you to the many ways you can become involved in your community. It's time for your host, Rick Rosman.
Hey out there. Hello. Hello, everyone. This is your host. This is your host, Rick Rosman. On the Rick Rosman, on the Rosman Experience, go to rickrosman.com. On the Easy Way Broadcasting Network, that's E-Z-W-A-Y Broadcasting Network.com. And if you want to get info on the show, it's info@easywaybroadcasting.com. You want to call in today, the number is 914-338-1303. And our show is unique. Our show is different. Our show highlights things that maybe most of us don't even notice or mention. And when you watch the Saturday shows or the Sunday shows, there's shows on politics and there's shows on finance and there's shows on real estate and how to get rich quick and all of those kinds of things. We decided to go a different direction. We decided with the Easy Way Broadcasting organization to do a show on philanthropy, where every week, every Sunday at 4 o'clock, every Sunday at 4 o'clock, we highlight a nonprofit that is making a difference. We highlight a nonprofit without commercial. There's no commercials on my side. I do not do a commercial. The nonprofit is not charged. They can get on the air with us, tell their story about what they're up to. Showtime, 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on the EasyWayBroadcasting.com. And to go to my blog, it's RickRosman.com. Twitter and all of that, it's RickRosman1 and RickRosman1 at gmail.com for Facebook. So those are how you can reach us. But let's digress a bit. Let's talk a little bit about how this came about. Let's talk about what was going on in our life. Yeah, Friday, I was fortunate enough to do an interview for the Union Rescue Mission newspaper. Now, this is the second time they asked me to highlight how to bring about change and end homelessness in downtown L.A. A wonderful experience. The Union Rescue Mission has been part of my life for years, ever since I was a kid. It's been part of, since I've been back in L.A., about the last 20 years, we get involved with donating time, talent, and treasure. And Reverend Andy Bales, who runs that place, is a rock star and also was the officiator at the wedding of Sheila and myself. We got to do an interview with the Union Rescue Mission about ending homelessness. So that was very, very, very poignant. Yesterday, I mean, you talk about getting involved in things. Jeff Henderson interviewed me. I got to go over to his studio over in Hollywood and spend some time, an hour with Jeff Henderson on his radio station. He reaches over 30 million. And we talked about, the nonprofits bus space and all that kind of stuff. So it really been a great, great time. I was just named recently president of the Steps for Education LA. It's a difficult place to find on the web, but the Steps for LA Foundation LA, what we do is that we provide for inner city kids, inner city students, scholarships for them where they're able to get involved and get into the parochial school system all the way through. And right now we have close to 200 to 300 kids getting that. Roy Brower from Sony is involved coming up in April. It's going to be on our blog. We're going to have our fundraiser and our gala down in a parochial school in South Central. That's coming up. That's exciting. There's a lot of things going on. I was just asked to do a column for the Washington Times. And how am I going to go about that? You have to watch out what you say yes to, because sometimes you feel a little bit nervous. Never wrote a column in my life, but it's going to deal with philanthropy. We're going to write a weekly column in the Washington Times dealing with philanthropy. Now, I am a going a little bit about me. I've been a financial advisor for the last 34 years. I started in 78 with a name firm. No commercials here. Still at it. However, the other part of Sheila, myself, my wife is Sheila. The other part of Sheila, myself, is working in the non-profit space. We're married. We live in Redondo Beach. Yeah, we can live a life of affluence and have a life of just ease and breeze. But we enjoy traveling, running. We do many marathons and half marathons. We're both passionate about trying to make a difference in to many of the folks who may not have a voice. Our programs are, you know, when we do our program here on the Easy Way Broadcasting, we do with the nonprofits. And I'm currently personally on the board of a number. And we'll start out with the Academy of Business Leadership. I'm on their board. You do a Google on that. Again, it's inner city kids getting an education, getting a different kind of education, actually doing business plans. A.C. Green Youth Foundation. The A.C. Green Youth Foundation, that's a legendary Laker. The legendary Laker works with the Boys and Girls Clubs in South Central, Compton, those areas. And we bring a different kind of an experience to those young people, not just a basketball camp. We're involved in their lives, trying to transform lives. And A.C. says something, and I know Wayne Gretzky says it too, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And it is so sad that when you look at, you know, downtown or Skid Row and the homeless, you look at the inner city, there are so many people there with so much talent who are not taking the shot. I belong to the Osmougha Foundation, A-S-M-O-U-G-H-A. I'm a director of development. That is, yes, he's a football player. It's Namdi. His mother and I started before, many years ago, we started a program where we work with the widows and orphans on AIDS in Nigeria. Now we're in South Africa, as well as we have programs here in the States, again, about education. You go to the website, and you can see the marvelous things that we do. I'm on the Cecil Murray Center for Social Justice Board. Reverend Chip Murray in South Central L.A. at First AME, emeritus. He was reverend there forever. He was in charge pastor there forever. He is truly a rock star. He now teaches theology at SC. The man is in his 80s and still has the energy of a teenager. And just to be around someone like Reverend Cecil Murray is someone who actually knows how to make a difference. And as I alluded to earlier, I've now been named president of the Steps for Education LA, which is, again, the inner city kids, where we give them scholarships, and there we work with folks from Sony and some of the major firms trying to make a difference. We also work with Union Rescue Mission, Long Beach Miller Children's, South Bay Healthcare, Scott Newman Foundation, ShareFest. By the way, ShareFest, Scott, Chad Meyer was a guest on our show last Sunday. Jefferson High School. Jefferson High School is an inner city school, and the list goes on. We try to give time, talent, and treasure. Our show, The Rosman Experience, on EasyWayBroadcasting.com, is trying to, you know, give a voice to the nonprofits, the people who make it happen. It's a privilege to be in a position to give back. Our challenge to our listeners is to maybe get more people involved. Maybe get them, every year we make our goals and our dreams and we say, okay, what are we going to do this year? Is this the year that we almost fed the homeless? Is this the year that we almost mentored a child? Is this the year that we maybe read a book to a child with pediatric cancer who's really going through a lot in a cancer ward? Is this the year? What you choose. You fill in the blank. And we happen to be involved in charities here in L.A. because we live in L.A., but there's the same needs, whether it's in L.A. or Philadelphia or Newark or wherever. There is the same need. The idea is to motivate, no matter where you are, to get involved, to get off the couch, to make the world a better place. Now, when the idea came for the show, and Eric Zulli, my producer, came up to me and said, yeah, we ought to do this. First of all, what you do in the nonprofit space is something that, you know what, it's private. Folks said, Rick, with what you're doing, and the fact that, that where you're at in life, maybe you could influence and motivate others. So this whole idea in the show is to get people to move and maybe start a movement. We're not going anywhere when 65 to 70% of our kids do not graduate from high school in the inner city. How can we go forward as a country? How can we go forward as a country when there's thousands and thousands of homeless in downtown L.A., let alone Oakland, San Francisco, and the list goes on? We can't go any further as a country. There is absolutely no way we can go anywhere. I'm going to give one example of something simple, and then I'm going to introduce our guest. The Union Rescue Mission had a golf tournament up at Trump in Palos Verdes. Now, you can imagine Trump in Palos Verdes, exclusive, right? Sheila and I sponsored a number of foursomes. I do not golf to help. My guest golfs, but I don't golf. So we helped and we sponsored foursomes. Then the idea hit us to have the Jefferson High School golf team be one of the foursomes. We went to Andy Bales at the Union Rescue Mission and said, are you okay with that? Sure. So we brought down, yes, Jefferson High School, yes, the school in South Central has a golf team. And you know that these young people do not ever get a chance to play in a major tournament or a major fundraiser like something Union Rescue Mission at Trump. We gave them the opportunity. Rosie Greer, the immortal Ram, was there. He's now an ordained reverend. He gave the benediction. He stayed and talked to the kids and mentored them. And since then, we've done it two other times, again, where we've sponsored the Jefferson High School golf team got to go to a major golf event at a major golf course and participate in everything, including the food and the dinners. And for those of you who are involved in a nonprofit golf tournament, you know that it's phenomenal. You know the celebrities are there. You know that everything is really wonderful. These kids' eyes were like saucers. And it also, what I've noticed in our work in the inner city is sometimes the inner city can be a barrier and a fence. And it's like it's where we are ordained to stay, and our choices are limited. By exposing just these four kids on the golf team to something different, may not sound like a lot, and maybe it isn't a lot, but it, to those kids, it meant the world, and that's all they do. Every time I go to Jefferson, because I am on their advisory council, every time I go to Jefferson, the golf coach, and I see some of the kids, and they come up and go, man, that was great. When are you going to do it again for us? And my goal and dream here is, you know, maybe we'll do it for, we'll get a lot more people who listen to this show to get involved in their community and say, you know what, maybe the inner city school where I live has a golf tournament. All right, in summation and going out there, The Union Rescue Mission and Jefferson both benefited from that charity. From that event, they both benefited. So you can see how we're trying to put it together. Not easy. And it's trial and error and trial and success. And it's just asking people to get involved. Now we're going to segue a little bit different. We're going to go a little bit differently. Our guest today, we have problems domestically, no doubt. There are problems domestically that are sometimes insurmountable. Sometimes we feel that they're overwhelming. We also have problems that I think our listeners will acknowledge. We have problems internationally. There are countries in the world, whether we choose to turn our back or not, that completely repress their societies. And the speaker we have today is a good friend of ours. I've known John forever. Went to Korea, and actually he was our host, and we went all over the place and saw the sights in Seoul. John Cha is a retired engineer. He went to Marquette. He writes and lectures about Korean and American leaders. Now, when we look at the Asian experience in the United States, and Sheila happens to be from China, the Asian experience in the United States is usually one that nobody really has emphasized. The people who have gone forward before the current generation of Asians have gone forward, and we see them all succeeding in the sciences. There were the people who hit the beachhead and actually made a difference. Maybe the doors weren't open in the United States as well as they should be to the people who are achieving. John wrote about a book about Susan Ann Cuddy, who was the first woman gunnery officer in U.S. Navy history in Willow Tree Shade. She was Korean. and that was, she did it during World War II, and then she went to NSA as a code breaker. John wrote the book. I mean, it's great. John wrote about Young Park, a winner of Entrepreneur of the Year Award. He came to the United States with $50 in his pocket and went on to build Paco Engineering, a giant in light steel industry. Now Paco, everybody knows who Paco is. And did anybody know that Young Paik, who was the founder of that thing, took it to where he did? And probably because of the Asian experience, whether he had the doors were wide open or not, but John wrote about Young and Paco is a very successful organization. John wrote about Dosen and Chang Ho and his leadership. He is a Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez rolled into one. His service leadership ideas from 100 years ago are now being talked about. LA Freeway Interchange is named after him, and he has a plaque in the Civil Rights Hall of Fame in Atlanta. Then John wrote about some of the dark guys, Kim Jong-tu, through the eyes of his mentor, Wang Jianghap. John has won several translation awards for translating Korean literature into English. Now, John's going to be on with us today. He's going to talk a little bit about his book. He's also going to talk a little bit about the Korean, especially the North Korean experience and maybe what's going on there. John's going to bring all of that on and maybe make us aware that, you know, while we go to bed at night with snug in our covers and everything is fine, there are people in the world who don't have it so good, let alone in the United States. There are people in the world who are on the verge of starvation, if not starving. So with that, I want to bring on our guest of the day, John Cha, author, engineer, humanitarian, basically an advocate for those that do not have a voice whatsoever. So please, on the Easy Way Experience, the Rosin Experience, let's welcome John Cha to the show.
Hi, Rick. Glad to be on your show. Thank you for letting me speak to you on your show.
John, it's a privilege, John. You know, when some of us make a difference, John, and some of us actually risk our necks making a difference, and you know, you've been you've done this for a number of years, and can you walk? I know we'll get to the book, but can you walk us through how maybe your own thinking evolved to get to where you are right now in regards to being an advocate for the, you know, for the poor folks in North Korea and maybe the plight and how you came to maybe to the present views today?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. The whole thing starts with I think you mentioned his name, Huang Jiangyup. I'll just call him Mr. Huang, and sometimes we'll call him Teacher Huang. But when I met him first time in 2003, and I was really struck by his presence, and I knew he was a high official, high-ranking official from North Korea. And he had defected to South Korea in 1997. And I didn't know much about him, but other than, you know, what I read in the newspapers and so on and so forth. But I didn't know he was a part of the elite group in North Korea. And it caused me to think why he defected to the South. And what happened was that by defecting to South Korea, it put his family and his colleagues, friends, in harm's way because they rounded up all his acquaintances and friends and so on and so forth. They put him in jail or they executed them, and his own wife committed suicide, and his daughter fell out of a moving truck.
John, did she fall out of the union moving truck, or do you suspect it was more to that?
Well, I think she probably had help. That got me to think. You know, why did he risk all this to leave and to North Korea, where he had a, you know, real high ranking position? And that got me to start thinking and got into research more and more, and found out that Yeah, he had the running battle with the Central Party, where he was a member of, and he had a running battle with Kim Jong Il, and he's dead now for a couple of years now, but he was the dictator over in North Korea.
Wow, John, the imagine meeting someone like this who risked it all to escape, and also in the midst of the, and I can only imagine the repression that's going on in North Korea and the refugee issue and on and on. This man must have been truly a remarkable human being.
Yeah, he was. You really impressed me so much, because when you meet somebody for the first time, sometimes you get this feeling, you know, there's an aura about people, and I really sensed that he was a historical man, and he turned out to be the historical man. And he devoted his life to what he believed that what North Korean people needed was democratization. He wanted to bring democracy to North Korea, and he argued with Kim Jong Il, you know, how to take North Korea, which direction, because at the time there was a debate whether. He was a proponent of the open market system, and he felt that open market system is the way to take Korea, North Korea, out of the poverty. But Kim Jong Il, he insisted that the military first policy was the way to take North Korea, and Hwang. Actually, he lost the argument, and since he lost the argument, Kim Jong Il, he wasn't a very nice guy. He tried to purge him, so I guess he had to sacrifice for his family and his colleagues to make his statement. And what really got me was the most important information he brought out in North Korea was the fact that there were starvation, there was a famine, and he claims there were about 3 million people who starved to death. And there's some argument about that figure, but he was in the position to get the stats and the numbers than anybody else, I figure, and I go along with his figures. So, 3 million dead, and this really got to me, and I just couldn't imagine how this could happen modern society, modern times like this. And that's what got me going, actually.
That would probably move a lot of us, John, to hear that kind of a story affecting, you know, there's very little information coming out of North Korea. There's other than maybe some social media does escape from there, and we do hear some things, you know, periodically. You know, lately all we hear is bombastic comments from the current fellow who runs it and his regime. But John, yeah, I don't know whether you want to go into it, but you've done, and I know you don't like to look at yourself as a hero, but can you talk about some of the work you've done, maybe in the refugee province, or you rather leave that one, and we'll talk about something else. I'll leave that one up to you.
There are a number of organizations over there that do help refugees. There were mostly 80% of our women, and okay, as they come out and they go into China or the next to the borders from North Korea, and there are Christian organizations, Buddhist organizations, and the other nonprofit organizations. And it's what we're trying to do is to get information, basically, to out of North Korea, and we contact all these people out of North Korea, and what we think the because there's such a lack of information from North Korea coming out, and also information going in. For instance, people out of North Korea, when you talk to them, they have no idea anything. They don't know anything about Kim Jong-il and, you know, his background or the entire Kim family. And that's kept pretty well in secret. And when they find out what kind of person or how Kim Jong-il lives and so on and so forth, he lives in huge mansions and palaces. Oh, he did. Now his son does. But when they find those things out, they get really sort of disillusioned. They're really surprised. And so we try to feed information into North Korea and bring out information from North Korea. And so that way we think, you know, information exchange will be the basis, you know, it will be the necessary thing for bringing democracy into North Korea. And this was Hwang's vision. And Mr. Hwang, well, he died in 2010. And well, there are a number of us who follow, subscribe to his philosophy, and that's what we do. As far as details of, you know, what we do with the refugees, so on and so forth, yeah, I would rather leave that out for now. But
sure.
Yeah, I think for us in the West to understand North Korea and what kind of country it is and why it is the way it is, I think I must say that that's the reason why my co-author and I, how we got involved with this, you know, book project. And so mm-hmm. I'm going around speaking to anyone and everyone who's willing to listen mm-hmm. about how North Korea became the way it is. And hopefully that'll help people understand why they sometimes behave that way, the way they do. And dictatorship that we're going across, well, we just don't know. We don't understand why, for instance, this new guy, Kim Jong-un, why he's, you know, making bellicose statements like this, his recent, tirade about the what Security Council, UN Security Council did, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And he's doing this because he has to establish himself as the new leader. Because his young age and so on and so forth, he has some credibility problem. So he's doing a lot of this. And he's also really probably feels betrayed by China, who signed on to new UN security sanction. And so he's sending threats to the United States and South Korea, but underneath all that, there's a sort of a tantrum kind of a thing against China, and China is just about the only friend he has. And so all these things going on, and people, you know, ask me, you know, why they like the way it is, and I try to answer some of this. And I think if we understand the ideological background and how Kim Jong-il came into power, because what the structure of the North Korean society, the way it's structured, was set up by Kim Jong-il. And to understand what's going on now, I think it would be helpful to understand what Kim Jong-il did and how he came into power and how he controlled North Korea. And so, basically, I'm on an awareness campaign, and, you know, we do have journalists who sacrifice themselves and go into China, and they're in danger too, because they talk to North Korean refugees who are in China looking for food and jobs and so on and so forth, and when they come in contact with the journalists that are out there, they are risking their safety, because there are North Korean agents that roam around in China, and they're out to, for some reason, they want to keep the information flow in check, and anyone who is caught talking to journalists or whatnot, they get picked up and sent back to North Korea, and where they end up in concentration camps. So it's a situation where very hard to imagine what's going on, but it is going on over there. And North Korean refugees, you know, they don't get a break. They just can't get a break in their life, and they do need a lot of help. And,
John, on the refugees, any idea what the amount or number that have poured over the border into China? Is there any estimates on that? I mean, they're probably all over the place, and the numbers are probably, you know, if it's a million, I know officially the stats would probably say 50,000. But what is your take on that, John? How many have actually made the trek out of the desperation of starving? The desperation of being subjected to such inhumane conditions to basically say, you know what, I'm going to risk my neck and go to a place where, you know what, I may also be subject to tremendous issues, but I'm willing to take the chance. Because, John, going over the border in China is no picnic, and you know, to do that means that these people have got to be at the point of absolute total desperation.
Yes. Yes, very they go out and look for food. Then during the famine, I think there were around 300,000 people that cross the border into China looking for food. And Mr. Huang, according to him, and at that time, he did go around the country and talked with station masters, railroad station masters, and they were telling him that the biggest job the station masters have is clearing out dead bodies.
Oh my God!
And dead bodies in the stations. And I mean, this is every morning. They would clear out hundreds of dead bodies, and some are in the station, and some are, you know, found dead on the train themselves. And so, during that time, it was 300,000, we think, and it's the number trickle down quite a bit. I think there are probably 50,000 out there now, because when Kim Jong-un, his new guy, came in, he just sealed the border, and he ordered the guards to shoot anybody that crosses the border. There's a river between North Korea and China.
Oh, my God. Now, John, many people look at a problem or they see something like this. Some of them get motivated to action, and others say, what can I do? Now, you've chosen the literature route to bring out, I know that you do a lecture tour. I know you were at Cal not too long ago, did a lecture, but I know that you do a lecture tour all over to anybody who will listen, and about the plight of what's going on. And also, John, you were writing a number, you just wrote a book about the former emperor of China, who just passed away. And you bring a lot of experience to that, and they say sometimes the pit is mightier than the sword. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write the book, and the hopes of where this book will go, and who's the audience? Because, John, most of us in America are just so caught up in day to day. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to do my vacations. I'm going to have fun, and I don't worry about anything else. And John, clearly you're dedicated to saying, hey, what? It's not so rosy out there in other parts of the world. Can maybe expand on that?
The title of the book is The Exit Emperor Kim Jong-il. I mean, he was the former dictator of North Korea. And originally, we planned to publish this book while he was alive, but he died on us in 2011. So I had to correct my manuscript to past tense, a lot of it, and so that took a while to do all that. But the emperor, originally entitled the book, I called it The Reluctant Dissident, meaning that Mr. Huang was dissenting against the Kim Jong-il, but he was reluctant to, because he had to sacrifice family. But Reluctant Dissident didn't go too well with the publisher. I mean, they had problem understanding what that meant. So anyway, I changed that to Exit Emperor Kim Jong-il. But the book, we try to make it simple for English audience, and it's based on interviews with Mr. Huang, my partner. I guess we interviewed him over 8 years time, and basically him and other North Korean defectors or former residents of North Korea, and compiled various things and talk about the Kim Il-sung's 10 principles, for instance. And 10 principles of Kim Il-sung is the governing document or governing ideology for North Korea. A lot of people, or even experts, they say that the North Korea is a Marxist, Stalinist country, and so on and so forth. And Juche, they talk about Juche ideology. But what it all comes down to is the Kim Il-sung's 10 principles, and that this is how Kim Jong-il rose to power, because he idolized, or he had all this idolization projects for his father, which in the end convinced his father that Kim Jong-il, he was the successor of you know, North Korean dictatorship. And so besides the famine figure of 3 million, Mr. Huang wanted to tell the world about Kim Il-sung's 10 principles. And I tried to, and this is a very, very involved document, and I try to simplify it so that English readers can understand what how lies are formed, the foundation of the North Korean lives, and the basically Kim Il-sung's 10 principles is it demands loyalty to the Kim, his father, and later to himself, and absolute loyalty is what drives the North Korean regime, and once you understand 10 principles, then things, you know, become sort of clear. What people have to go through, they have to memorize all these 10 principles from schools, work, at home. And they have open meetings every Saturday, and they have to come to a group and talk about these 10 principles and talk about their lives and how they're going to, you know, how they're going to devote their lives for the Kim Il-sung and or Kim Jong-il. And so I would try to simplify this in such a way that people could understand. Maybe some policymakers, teachers, general public, and so far, people are saying nice things about it. Actually, I haven't talked to everyone about it, but I got a couple of nice reviews in Amazon. One in Amazon.com here in the United States, and one in UK. And so, I think maybe we're well on our way, and I hope it reaches wide, of course.
Now, John, if there's three basic questions to wind this up. Number one, John.
Yeah.
If somebody's sitting back right now and they're hearing this story, and how do they how do they get their book? Where would they go to get your book? Is it, you know, you talk about, you know, how where would they go to get the book that you guys have put so much blood, sweat, and tears in order to bring to light the issue, trying to explain it so that an English or American person who's maybe his main item would be watching American Idol one night versus being aware of the plight of somebody in North Korea. How would they get a hold of this book, John? And the second part to that, what can the average person do who all of a sudden might be moved to tears right now listening to the story? Is there anything somebody could do to make a difference? If somebody's sitting right now in Keokuk, Maine, and try and listen to this, what do they do if they wanted to help? And the third thing, John, if they wanted to have you come and speak before a group whether it's, you know, the Rotary Club or the or the Chamber of Commerce in some town or a university, you know whether it's all the way from Michigan to you know, to UC San Diego and all parts east. How would they do it? So it's a sort of a three-part question.
Yeah, okay. I hope I can remember them all.
Yeah.
But it's available in print form and also in the ebook, and I guess Amazon.com would be the best way to get it. And you know, if people would remember, exit Emperor Kim Jong Il and type that in, they'll probably get to it.
Exit Emperor Kim Jong Il.
Yeah,
would be on Amazon, and that's the most efficient way to purchase the book. What about if there's any history teachers on high school history teachers or English teachers or something like that? Would that be something for that? Maybe they could order a bunch of them for the classroom or something like that. Would that be? You know, I'm just thinking out of the box. I think that the average American teenager has no clue what's going on, and your book would shed a light. Have you seen any interest at that level?
Yes, I've been on lecture tour at the universities. They're interested in, you know, in Asian studies and so on and so forth, and there's quite a bit of interest there. We try to make it for high school students also, and mm-hmm. we haven't got to high school yet, but mostly...
Okay.
Mostly, I would say that people who are interested in North Korea they come from policymakers, State Department, so on and so forth, and also those people who study East or Asian studies. And so, but we hope to get to high school and different groups of people and. I find they are very fascinated with the whole thing, and they come away with a little bit better understanding why they are the way they are. And mm-hmm. And second part of the question was what people, average person, could do. I think first thing I would like to happen is sort of awareness. I think generally a lot of people, they get their information on, you know, on TV and internet and so on and so forth. They paint the media paints North Korea as sort of a weird place, but what they have is a weird dictator. But average person, they want the same thing, like everybody else. They want, you know, they want food, they want home, they want a home, and education for their kids and medical services. I mean, they're no different from anybody else. And this is a message I'd like to get out to the general public that they're not a bunch of weirdos. They're just people. And so, and the third part of the question, I forgot what it was. Can you?
Well, we're talking about how can people get involved? How can they get the book? And the third thing is, John, if they wanted to reach you to have you come out and do a lecture what's the best way to reach John Cha? To have you come out and talk about, you know, what you're up to in your work, and especially your latest book, Exit Kim Jong Il.
They could contact you.
Okay.
How's that? And
okay.
If they want, I have a blog going on too, and it's called blog is, you know, blog is www. Exit Emperor Kim Jong Il. Authorsexpress.com.
So www.kingjohnillauthorsexpress.com if someone wanted to reach you.
Yeah.
Or they can come through info@easywaybroadcasting.com for the listeners who may want to come this way and perhaps get some more information, or they can go right on Amazon and actually purchase the book Exit King John Ill, and that'll get them there, and they can get it. You can get the book in hardcover, and you also said it's an e-book now too, right?
Yeah, it's on Kindle, and yeah, so on and so forth. Yeah, and yeah, that would be great. That would be fine. And your listeners, that would be the easiest way to get to me. Will be they know you, and so they get to me through you, and they'll be fine. It'll probably be the easiest way. I mean, your program is called Easy Way, after all. So
it's cool, Rick Rosman. Yeah, Rick Rosman. The Rosman Experience on the Easy Way Broadcasting.com. Now, John, to wrapping up, I got to ask you the question: what's the future? I mean, we hear the crazy remarks out of North Korea, which sometimes doesn't even get page one or doesn't even get mentioned on evening news. But it does make some people ponder. Where do you see the North Korean experience going? Is there hope, John? Now, I've known you for a number of years, and you're probably the most optimistic guy on the planet, and you said, sooner or later, things will turn out well there. How do you see the future?
Wow. I think the North Korean elites or a governing body of North Korea, they have to understand what is going on in the rest of the world. And I think they've been isolated so long that they can only think one way, which is, I think they're still back in Cold War days. And I think they have to come out of that, number one. And so, I hope that with the new internet and telephones, there are about a million cell phones inside North Korea now, and they are trying to get in touch with the rest of the world. And I think that's an encouraging sign that they understand what's going on outside, and I hope in 3 to 5 years or so, the people of North Korea themselves they become more and more informed about what's going on over there and what they've been enduring, and that their way of life is not the way of life. They just don't know, and so we got to find ways to get information in there. So hopefully, 3 to 5 years, they'll understand that there needs to be a change, and I think this is what happened in Germany. In East Germany, or people of East Germany, learned that the life doesn't have to be the way it was under the dictatorship, and they rose up, and we hope that maybe North Korean people too will become more intelligent about how life should be.
Hey John, we've got somebody calling in on 8722. John, Eric, can you put him through? 8722. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Who's this?
Yes, this is David from Orange County, California.
David. Welcome to the Rosman Experience with John Cha and Rick Rosman. What's your question?
Hey,
On North Korea, it seems like there's a lot of Christians that are in labor camps, and it's very hard for them to leave, and even if they cross the border into China, a lot of them are sent back. It seems like China is more open as long as it's not a direct threat to the government, you know, whereas in Korea they consider it a direct threat to the government. Is that correct?
Yes, that's you pretty much said, you know, what's going on over there. There are about 250,000 people that are incarcerated in various camps or concentration camps scattered all over North Korea. And when they do escape, go into China, the people, there are a lot of different ways to go, but if they're lucky, they get help from local Chinese people, and a lot of times they get picked up by brokers there, and they do it for a fee, and sometimes they just go into China and look, they find work, or in a lot of women case, they end up marrying Chinese men and have kids and so on and so forth. But they are sometimes they're caught in China and they're sent back, repatriated to North Korea, and they face persecution in North Korea. And so we're trying to get the Chinese government to recognize these North Korean refugees and give them refugee status, as opposed to they're considered as illegal border crossers, and they pick them up and they allow North Korean agents to come in to China and patrol certain areas in China, and they pick up these refugees and send them back. And we're trying to get that change too, but we haven't had so much luck so far. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. So thank you.
David, just before you go, you sound like you're up on this stuff. Are you involved in anything with the Korean community or the refugee situation? Is that something that you are involved with?
Not directly. I'm more. I have some expertise in China, so
okay.
I follow
okay.
that angle.
Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for the call. We have another call. David, take care and Happy New Year. We got another call on 5406. And are you there, 5406?
Hi, Rick. This is Jim. And again, I've enjoyed your show. The guests are so interesting. I know time's probably running short, but just had a quick. John, you're not probably familiar with the Star Wars scenario and on the indoctrination of these people. In that movie, there was a statement to the Empire, one of the generals, the closer you tighten your fists, the more star systems will escape. What that means is they're trying to totally keep everything contained. Now, with the new world, the new age, you know, is there any crack in this indoctrination with the people in North Korea because of the internet? I mean, do you think more of the outside world is getting in? And they're I know it's probably pretty tight and pretty controlled, but do you see any more of the outside world on what's going on, you know, slowly getting into these ears?
Yes, I do. Like I said before, a little while ago, there are about a million handphones or cell phones there now, and then internet access is rather limited. But it is happening, and your reference to Star Wars, the fist clenching and so on and so forth. This is what young Kim Jong Un is doing right now, and he's more strict than his father was.
Now that answers the question. I was wondering about that.
Oh, okay. And he ordered the guards. I mean, before it used to be like if you bribe these border guards, they would, you know, turn the other way, and people would escape or cross the river, and so on and so forth. But now they're starting to get into these border guards, and if they allow refugees leave, they're shot. Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel that the internet had an impact on what's been happening in the Middle East, and you have Syria, Libya, Egypt, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And you have these dictators being overthrown by what's, you know, coming through on the younger generation, and it just they're tired of this lifestyle. And that's, you know, that's what I was wondering, if that's all getting through to this younger set, and then they have ways of blocking it. But, you know, the people are smart. They find ways around these blocks, and, you know, with the internet and with the laptops. I don't know if they monitor how many people could actually own computers and own laptops and cell phones, so on and so forth. Is it a free thing down there? Everybody can have a phone to do that kind of thing?
No, the computers are very limited.
Yeah.
And they have their own operating system. It's called the Juche operating system. And it can only do what the sensors. It's subject to heavy censorship, of course, and they cannot. It's not hooked up to the outside. And
so, as far as the younger generation, though, what do you think the percentages of the, you know, maybe the kids, 15 to 25 years old that are seeing what's going on in the outside world and how different they are. What would you say?
Yeah, they are the younger set. Definitely, they have a way to find out things, and some are very computer savvy. But the percentage wise, I mean, you can probably I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you can probably count on in the two hands. And I,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's not much at all. And I think only special schools and so on and so forth, they have computers available to them. But it's not widespread.
In this day and age, it must be an awful tight grip they have to stop all that.
Yeah, very much so, very tight grip. And they have this cell structure that controls, I mean, it controls every daily lives of people, and it'll be tough to crack all that. But
yeah, well,
like you say, like you say, I think people will find ways to.
Right.
We're hoping that
will. All in prayer, John, huh? Well, you know what this stuff Rick does. It's just amazing. You know, the humanitarian side, and with what you do. I mean, it's just amazing. I just hope that eventually something the crack gets a little wider, and more information can pour in, and things change.
Yeah, that's the best we can hope for right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, you guys, for your time, and I'll let you go. But
thanks for calling in, Jim and John. Is there one last shout-out? That, first of all, if you want to get John's book, it's Exit Emperor Kim Jong-il on Amazon. It's on e-books. John can give you, again, the address about how to reach him. You can reach him through the easywaybroadcasting.com, the Rosman Experience, and John has his own website if you want to reach him for public speaking, anything. And John, so why don't you give a sort of a wrap-up, and then we'll close it down. So go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for having me on the show, Rick. This really helps me to figure out what people are interested in and how I should go about telling people, and because this is a very complicated subject, but hopefully we get the general public to better understand what North Korea is, and that will be the first step to get anything done, we feel. And so, and you helped me do that, and it has been a tremendous help, and I want to thank you for this opportunity, and I hope your listeners, if they're interested, it sounds like your listeners are very interested in making a difference or changing the world, the transformation, and so on and so forth. So I hope they get in touch with me through you, or and get some books.
You want to give your web address one more time, John?
It's Exit Emperor Kim Jong Il.
And the web address? Yeah.
authorsexpress.com.
Authorsexpress.com. Okay.
Yeah.
So Exit Kim Jong Il.
Exit Emperor.
Emperor. Okay. All right.
If you just Google Exit Emperor.
Okay.
John,
ladies and gentlemen, I've had the privilege of knowing John for almost 30 years, and you know when to know John, you see a true heart. I've known him over the years, and then when retires and everything else, and unlike the typical retired person, he's not on the golf. John's a good golfer, but he's not on the golf course every day. He's out there making a difference. He's out there trying to change the world. He's out there in one of the hot spots of the world where it's not exactly the safest place to be, the safest place to express opinion, the safest place to write about, the safest place to be involved. And it's also about people right now that are literally starving to death. We who have it so good in this country, there are people out there in the world, and we read about it all the time, but somehow North Korea sometimes escapes the mainstream media. John, will you come back one time and tell us in a few months how things are going?
Sure, I sure will. Anytime.
All right.
Thank you very
all
much.
All right. John, thank you so much for being on, and look forward to having you on again, and for all that you do. And again, folks, that Exit Emperor Kim Jong Il, go out and buy it. You're helping support a wonderful cause. John, again, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.
Okay, folks, now let's go back to the easywaybroadcasting.com, the Rick Rosman Experience, and let's talk about our upcoming guests. And our upcoming guests, in the next couple of weeks, you're going to hear from Ruben Bras from the Scott Newman Foundation, named after Paul Newman's son, who had a drug issue. And they started this organization called the Scott Newman Foundation, which gets involved in families that have a huge some exposure to drugs and alcohol. They take the entire family to an outside setting and try to make a difference in terms of lifestyle and choices and those types of things, and they've have influenced a number of lives. Also coming up, we will have the Michael Taft and Brian Boyle. Now, you can say, who are those guys? Michael Taft is the principal of Jefferson, and Brian Boyle is the counselor, the guidance counselor at Jefferson. And they'll be on to talk about the Jefferson experience and what it's like to be involved in a high school that has some challenging issues. And to give you an idea of budget cuts and where we are in society, and Brian will not be happy with what I'm going to say, is that Jefferson High School has one guidance counsel, and that's Brian Boyle. His funding comes from a grant. The grant runs out at the end of the year. At the end of the year, Jefferson High School may not have a guidance counselor. Now, there are ways for people to help, and there is a nonprofit there, of course, and we'll have that angle. So we'll be able to to address that. But that gives you an idea of the funding issue, of the money issues, of the issues that are facing, you know, the folks here at home. And over the coming months, we're going to try to bring in more speakers like John and deal with the international situation and some of the things that are going on internationally that, you know, indirectly will affect us and directly affect us, where our politicians and our leaders will have to make decisions based on North Korea or what's going on in the Middle East or what's going on in some of the places in Africa or some of the other repressed regimes around the world. So the Rosman Experience is about change. It's about getting involved. I know that sometimes we're booked as a motivational / financial arena. Right now, it's still tax deductible to donate to your favorite 501(c). Just make sure, and we can help you there. You know, you can contact us again at the Rosman Experience or info@easywaybroadcasting.com. Sometimes nonprofits may not be who they're cracked up to be. And make sure that the nonprofit that you're involved in is actually the money that you're giving goes to exactly where it's supposed to go. I can help you guide you through some of the questions about what to ask in terms of how much overhead, that type of thing, is in the nonprofit, and will it actually go to where your donations, your hard-earned money, will it go to where it's supposed to be? But the neat thing right now in the tax law is that donations are still tax deductible. Of course, contact your tax advisor and verify that in your situation it will be there. And I know there's going to be some changes in Congress coming up. We're excited. This is about week 10 of the Rosman Experience. A lot of things are happening, and look for us on the Washington Times. We're going to do an article there on philanthropy. RickRosman.1, RickRosman1 @gmail for Facebook. RickRosman.1, the number one. RickRosman1 for Twitter. We've got a lot of stuff on the blog out there. And if anybody has any ideas of any nonprofits that should be recognized, get them into info@easyway.com to the Rosman Experience. We'd be more than happy to get them. To give them some venue and a shout out for what they're doing in your part of the country or your part of the world. So with that, this is Rick Rosman coming to you on the easywaybroadcasting.com. Again, information there is at info@easywaybroadcasting.com. To contact us, go to Rick Rosman1 @gmail, and you get us on Facebook. And this is Rick Rosman on the Easy Way Broadcasting for the Rosman Experience signing off. Everybody have a wonderful week. And my challenge to everybody is get involved. Make a difference. Thank you very much. Have a great evening and a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Listen to Easy Way Broadcasting shows powered by WTVNetworks.com every day of the week on Blog Talk Radio with celebrity hosts Eric Zulli, Shane Sparks, Sarah Winchester, Rick Rosman, and Mo Egger. Easy Way Broadcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303.